Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Airlines were basically grounded for much of last year, and many carriers tried to predict when travel would rebound. United Airlines took a different tack.
I think they came to the conclusion that really anything that they did would really be a guess. And if they guessed wrong, they would lock themselves into a plan that could set them on the wrong path.
So did the flexibility pay off? And WeWork finally makes its Wall Street debut. How the first day of trading went. Plus, can't find a car rental? There are alternatives. It's Thursday, October 21st. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Two years after WeWork's first IPO effort and valuation imploded, the office-sharing company finally made it to the New York Stock Exchange today. Shares rose in early trading and ended the day up 13.5% at $11.78. It marks a comeback for WeWork, which faced questions about its corporate governance connected to its co-founder and former CEO, Adam Neumann. Instead of an IPO, WeWork went public by merging with BoEx Acquisition, a blank check company or SPAC. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Elliot Brown, co-author of the book Cult of We.
WeWork has always been good historically at finding the sort of easy money out there. And so if you look throughout their history, they always went to every year, they sort of found what the hot new in vogue trend of fundraising was. You know, and they went to SoftBank in 2017 and got a ton of money from them. And now in 2021, SPACs are really sort of huge. And WeWork went there and was well funded by them. So it gives them some money to continue covering their losses and potentially pivot to actually profits at some point.
Elliot says the company's success could offer clues on the future of work.
I think it's going to be a bit of a weather vane for what happens with the office in the endemic phase of the pandemic. They have a ton of offices. They have a ton of empty space right now. And the big question is, when will it fill up? If it will fill up? And how will they do? You know, rents have fallen across the U.S. And so, WeWork is still paying leases that were set, some of which quite a while ago, at higher rates. On the other hand, companies are trying to figure out what to do with their office space. And one good solution for a company is to do something temporary, which is what WeWork offers if they don't know what the future looks like.
The Federal Reserve says it will bar senior officials from buying individual securities and will restrict investment activities to broad-based products like mutual funds. The new rules come following the disclosure of questionable trading activities by Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan and Boston Fed President Eric Rosengren. They coincided with extensive market interventions by the Fed during the pandemic. The two officials have since resigned. Kaplan acknowledged in a statement that his stock trading distracted from the Fed's work. The Boston Fed said Rosengren would retire early, citing health reasons. In a report released today, Facebook's oversight board rebuked the company for not being forthcoming about having a separate set of rules for high-profile users. The board said Facebook repeatedly failed to turn over or provided incomplete information on how it treats VIPs. The board said it's drafting rules on how to overhaul the system, known as cross-check, following a Wall Street Journal investigation into the practice. But the board has limited authority. Critics point out that it's funded by Facebook and does not have enforcement powers. Vaccine makers Pfizer and BioNTech say their COVID-19 booster proved more than 95% effective against symptomatic cases. The companies have reported previously that boosters increased antibody levels, but this is the first study testing whether an additional dose provides protection. More than 10,000 people who had been part of the late-stage study that led to the vaccine's original authorization were enrolled. On average, they received a booster 11 months after the second dose. Southwest Airlines says it's cutting flights for December and beyond after thousands of cancellations earlier this month cost them $75 million. The company says they were triggered by bad weather, air traffic control issues, and staffing shortfalls. Meanwhile, in its earnings report today, Southwest said it made a third quarter profit of $446 million, including government aid. Without the money, the airline had a loss of $135 million and is expecting another loss in the final quarter of the year due to rising labor and airport costs. And speaking of airlines, in Nevada, Mesa Air says it's planning to get into the food delivery business using autonomous electric drones. Mesa plans to run the trial in less densely populated parts of Reno, hoping to gather data for a broader rollout across the U.S. and New Zealand. U.S. regulators are still developing rules to manage airspace, which includes both commercial drones with currently approved aircrafts. Mesa is among a number of companies, including tech giants like Amazon, Alphabet, and others, that are testing drone delivery for consumers. Coming up, airlines came up with different strategies to make it through the pandemic. Why United gave up trying to predict the future of air travel.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
The pandemic upended the airline industry. In the spring of 2020, most flights were canceled as governments imposed restrictions and businesses closed. Airlines had to pivot quickly, rapidly rethinking their business plans as they tried to predict the course of the pandemic and when demand for air travel would return. Amid all that planning and scrutinizing, United came to an unconventional conclusion that it couldn't predict when or even if air travel would rebound. So how did that impact the carrier's business strategy? And how did it work out? Joining me now with more is reporter Allison Sider, who writes about airlines and air travel for The Wall Street Journal. Hi, Allison. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So, Allison, let's start back in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic when it first started spreading throughout the country. Airlines were watching this very closely. How was United assessing the situation at that time?
In the early days of the coronavirus pandemic, when it seemed to be confined to China, it was obviously already a big problem for airlines. You know, they fly to Asia, they fly to China, and having that impact their business was an issue. But, you know, really until February, when it became clear that it had spread to Italy, it wasn't clear that it was going to become a real global phenomenon. So, you know, around late February, when Milan went under quarantine, you know, that's kind of when United CEO Scott Kirby became really alarmed, became convinced that they had to take more drastic action.
What was the airline's conclusion about how it would respond to the pandemic?
You know, in the first couple of months, you know, as the pandemic began to really impact travel in the U.S., you know, nobody really had a clue how bad it would get. You know, Scott Kirby, United CEO, was pretty early in telling everyone that he thought it was going to be a full year problem, which, you know, came as a surprise to a lot of people when he first articulated that. And, you know, as the months went on and it got to May, the airline was trying to sort of plan out the following year and plan out 2020. I think they came to the conclusion that really anything that they did would really be a guess. And if they guessed wrong, they would lock themselves into a plan that could set them on the wrong path.
So in kind of throwing out the conventional strategy here, what practices did United adopt here to respond and what were the risks?
They took a lot of steps to allow themselves to be as flexible as possible. You know, one of them was keeping all of their pilots on board and keeping them all current so they could continue flying no matter, you know, when the government aid ended or when the pandemic ended. They also assembled together a big team that they called the bounce back team from all different parts of the organization and had some of these people work together for the first time to try and think through, you know, any little thing that they might miss or that they might not be thinking of, you know, that they would need to take into account whenever the airline wanted to bounce back. So, you know, thinking a year ago about stuff that might trip up a recovery in 2021, And so in some cases, that meant starting to hire a lot earlier than they might have otherwise, or spending money that they weren't quite sure they had yet, you know, just in order to remain prepared. So, you know, the risk was really that nobody knows how long demand would remain depressed and how long can they continue on like that.
How did this strategy compare to what United's rivals were doing?
You know, one thing that differentiated United from some of its rivals was just decisions about how much they should be flying. You know, other airlines like American and Southwest in particular were more opportunistic during the pandemic, you know, quicker to pounce if they saw a surge in demand and try and capitalize on it. You know, Southwest was, you know, very aggressive in pushing into new markets and expanding, kind of hunting for revenue. And United was a little more conservative, a little more restrained when it came to adding flights. So, you know, another risk that they faced was potentially being late and missing out on demand. And, you know, United has argued that, you know, they were okay missing out on the beginnings of a travel surge if it meant that they could be more certain in what was happening and more certain that they could ramp up quickly.
So how did this past summer's surge impact United's plans? Did they lose out on some of that demand?
United also ramped up a lot this summer. They were maybe a little slower than some of the other airlines to add back flights and add back capacity. And, you know, even as they've started to expand pretty aggressively, United has remained smaller than airlines like, you know, American and Southwest. The airlines that expanded more quickly and were more ambitious with their schedules, they faced some of their own problems. You know, some of them encountered staffing difficulties and in some cases had to cut back some of the flights they were planning to operate because it just turned out to be a lot harder than they expected to, you know, to bring everything back up to full force that quickly. So United avoided some of those problems. You know, it didn't have some of the same pilot training slowdowns or log jams that other airlines had. It was a kind of a rough summer for all airlines, but, you know, United has said it considers the planning process that it went through to have been successful.
We are in earnings season, and earlier this week, United reported a third quarter loss of $329 million. So, Allison, how are analysts assessing United's pandemic strategy? Did it work?
You know, I think analysts are looking at United's strategy and thinking that it's still unclear kind of whether it will work. You know, one of the things that United is banking on is a rapid increase in travel eventually, you know, whenever that comes. And United is particularly betting on business travel coming back in full. And that's something that analysts and investors are still really divided on. You know, United is extremely confident and they've made this huge aircraft order and are retrofitting some of their planes to really focus on capturing more premium travel. You know, people like corporate travelers who will pay for extra legroom or first class seats. And they've made that a real priority. It's not clear to everyone, you know, that business travel will fully recover. Some people believe it might be permanently changed. So United reported a loss. Several other airlines also have reported losses, you know, in the last 3 months. The Delta variant slowed down the recovery the carriers were seeing over the summer. So it's delayed some of the profits that, you know, United had thought it would earn in the second half of the year. But, you know, the bigger question will really come in the next couple of years when we see, you know, how quickly some of these lucrative business travelers come back.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Allison Sider. Allison, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, airlines aren't the only ones who have struggled to come back from the pandemic. Many rental car companies sold off their fleets last year, and they've been struggling to replace their inventory because of the global chip shortage. For travelers, that may mean fewer and pricier rental options. Our travel reporter Allison Poley has some tips to get around that this holiday season.
So they need to book soon. The sooner the better. And it helps to be flexible. It helps to be flexible in terms of your pickup location. So you might be able to find a better deal if you don't pick up from an airport location. You might also be able to find a better deal if you choose not to have the rental car for the duration of your entire trip. So maybe you just need it for a few days to get to one part of your trip to do a certain activity. Then you can drop it off and take ride shares or public transportation for the rest of the trip. That might give you better luck in finding a reservation.
Allison has more tips on our website, wsj.com. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.